Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Elevation of Sound podcast, where we explore the magic of music through a local lens. This is a completely independent venture brought to you by Grey Wolf Records and Productions, produced by Anthony Lacus and presented by myself, Mick Hayes. Remember, folks, if you don't give up, you've never failed. Here we go. Good night, good morning, good afternoon. Whether you're washing the dishes or driving the car, we have Ray Himes from the Rolling Blackouts with us today.
Hear, hear.
Spoiler alert, myself and Ray go back a long way with a lot of shared adventures, and it's my great pleasure to have him here today. Ray, how the hell are you?
Living the dream one day at a time.
Oh, absolutely. I love the sound of that. So, as per always, I always kind of let people know that this is a kind of a past, present, future sort of kind of a scenario with this podcast. So bearing that in mind, I always ask people when they come in, well, what are your earliest musical memories, your earliest influences, and where did it all start for you?
Well, the benefit of this is you've met my dad, so yeah. When I speak about him, you actually can kind of draw something in your memory. But I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and so my earliest musical memories were with my dad's CD collection. He's something of an amateur chef, and so he would always put on music while he was cooking, and it happened to be Beatles primarily, I would say, and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, all the way to Poco and, you know, Bee Gees, and it didn't really stray too far from that kind of wheelhouse, but yeah, became a huge Beatles fan. And then after I moved to Chicago suburbs, there was basically two CD collections my dad had.
Yeah.
The ones that he would play and the ones that he bought that he was like, no, whatever.
Yeah.
And they were in the basement. So then I made my way to the basement, you know, as a kid trying to fuck off and just, I wound up listening to all of the CDs that he had kind of rejected.
Yeah.
And that became my actual CD collection.
Okay.
And that was Steely Dan, Asia.
Oh, cool.
And,
yeah.
You know, just all the stuff that really, really wound up affecting me. But I will say I'm the world's biggest Beatles fan.
I know that, yeah. And, you know, how could you not be? There's such a canon there. And what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when it comes to the Beatles, they were there kind of
well,
in laboratory conditions.
And it's worth noting that at that time I had gotten a hold of a guitar.
Yeah.
So I had thought about songs and songwriting, and there's no better band than the Beatles if you're thinking about songs and songwriting.
Absolutely. What age were you when you got your first guitar?
Well, it was well after I had started playing, because my dad has a collection of guitars. So I actually learned to play guitar on a 1952 Martin Double Aught 17.
Oh, wow.
Which is incredible. Yeah. I mean, and yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. I remember my dad had what he called his office. It was basically just a man cave on the first floor.
Yeah.
And that was where the computer was and all of his all the shit my mother wouldn't let him.
Sorry, it's okay.
My mother wouldn't let him put around the house. You know, it was just his room, and there was guitars everywhere. And I remember going to my friend's house, and there was a guitar in the corner. And I remember going, I had to be like six or five or six, and I go, "Oh, a guitar."
Yeah,
my dad plays guitar. Like I had already identified somehow with the guitar before I even started playing.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, guitar." Yeah, yeah. No, that's.
Well, I suppose seeing your dad at home.
Yeah, exactly. Guitar, yeah, like I had already thought about it before I even really started playing. But then I remember going to my dad and said, "Hey, I think I want to learn how to play the guitar." And he went, "Finally." He didn't want to push it on me, but he was like waiting for me to ask.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Sit right down." And he taught me how to play like there's a really obscure Paul McCartney song called Yellow Bird, which is just like a three chord tune. And like, that was the first tune I think I learned. And then I really wanted, not to make it a bird theme, but I really wanted to learn Blackbird. That song spoke to me.
Yeah.
Just the way, the motion of the music and the lyric. And, I was like, if I could just learn Blackbird, that was the idea.
Yeah.
And then I eventually did. And then I don't want to zoom too far ahead here, but, you know, I wound up kind of surpassing my dad in musical attention.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted to, like,
get into the
learn all the shit. Yeah.
Get into the nuts and bolts of
it. Nuts and bolts of it, yeah. And he doesn't have much of an appetite for that. So, it's completely through my dad that I even became a guitar player whatsoever, or into music whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same story for so many people. You know, get influenced by a parent or an older sibling.
It's the same thing like learning a language. If you do it young, it happens naturally. If you have to learn it as an adult, it tends to be clunky. Yeah,
it's more difficult to do it.
Right, yeah. So it was a blessing that I got it at a young age.
So you were very young when you picked up the guitar.
8 or 9, something like that.
Yeah, so that, you know, I mean, so that's a great basis.
But it wasn't for a couple of years that I even took it very seriously. I was playing and I was trudging through, you know, the initial parts of my fingers hurt. I don't think I sound very good. I got all that out of the way before I was, really actually conscious as a adult, you know. And then I remember something around 13, 14, you start to go, oh, I think I got the hard part out of the way. I think I could really run with this. Yeah.
Yeah. But you were picking songs apart, like you said, Blackbird. So paying a lot of attention to the nuances of that. And
kind of. I think I was just learning shapes at that point. Yeah. And then now, if I were to play Blackbird, I would be thinking about the chords the whole time through.
Yeah. Or the motion of the tune, or why specific chords are, you know.
Well, and I don't want to blast too far ahead here, but I did study music at a pretty high level at one point, and it is a blessing and a curse, because I think... let's pick a song like I'm a Believer by the Monkees or something, I would be thinking 1, 4, 5, 1, 5, 5, 5, you know, like I would be thinking in numbers, and it's like that can be really beneficial, but also it robs you of a certain thing.
You
know, you're thinking about it analytically, and you can't go back.
It's
it has to be analytical now.
You're not doing it just on, you're not just writing on soul, basically. If that's even
right. And I don't want to blast into the Blackouts bit here, but I play with a guy, Tommy.
Yeah,
Tommy Russell, amazing guitar player, an absolute mother of a guitar player. I mean, he's really, really good. But he doesn't do it like that at all.
Yeah,
he can't think that way.
Yeah,
where I'm like, hey, play an A major 7, and he wouldn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how do you do what you're doing and not know that part? You know, that part blows my mind. So I guess there's a lot of ways to think about it.
Oh, 100%. I suppose, you know, it's kind of like a spectrum in its own way, really, what we want to look at it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I do think that sometimes you could be a little bit, I suppose, if you get too theoretical about it, it can, like you said, hamper your own instincts, you know?
Well, when I was younger, I was really almost... shy of music theory, because I thought, oh, well, I don't need to be, I'm not a jazz player. You know, I had a little bit of more punk in me at that point in time.
Yeah.
And but I heard a really great quote. I can't tell you who said it. It was, music theory is not prescriptive. It's descriptive.
Yeah.
It's not telling you what to play. It's telling you why what you're playing is
okay. It works.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Right.
Yeah.
So it's not holding you back from anything.
Yeah.
It's just telling you why everything works. Like,
that's a good way of putting it, you know, you know, and it's kind of, it doesn't make it kind of alienating that if you don't know music theory, then you've no right to ever pick up an instrument. You know what I mean?
No, and there's a really interesting comment on that too, or like Dwayne Allman.
Yeah.
Never learned music theory. Incredible. Paul McCartney says, I don't know music theory. Well, you do.
Yeah.
We're just using different terms, apparently. Yeah, but like, if you learn enough Beatles songs, you're like, this guy knew what he was doing. He might be thinking about it in a slightly different way. But, you know, there's a agreed upon set of terms for music theory. But he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He might not think he knows music theory, but I think he does.
Yeah, 100%. If you look at, there's no real obvious, well, there is, and there's all different types of songs within the Beatles canon, but a lot of Beatles material, particularly the early stuff, I mean, it's not that obvious what they're doing, you know what I mean? There's a lot of sevenths and stuff like that in there, you know?
Yeah, and maybe what your comment earlier was poignant, because they're breaking a lot of the rules.
Yeah.
Quote-unquote rules.
Yeah.
You know, but... You know, there are no rules, really.
Well, Beatles were in a very, very you know, I'm not trying to in any way disparage the Beatles. Far be it from me.
Not
to
in
ever,
front of me, you won't.
But you know what I mean? It's like they were there at an amazing time as well, when, you know, technology had kind of caught up to them, and they were there in a talented enough, you know, group.
And George Martin, thank God.
Well, there you go. You know what I mean? But they also had the will to be able to experiment, and and they were given the resources to do that. So they did end up inventing a lot of stuff. Because they were almost like kind of like the NASA of music, you know? In a way, you know?
No, certainly. Sense. Well, and there is a little bit of right time, right place happening there.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it's the term you invent, you know, you make your own luck. You know, they were grinding, you know, playing three shows a night. And they were the ones who it should have happened to.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, and also with, you know, a writing pair like Lennon and McCartney. I mean, all right.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know what's crazy? I thought about this the other day when I was taking a slash in the bathroom. Yeah. I was like, the Beatles broke up. They were all in their 20s. And I'm 30.
Yeah.
So the Beatles had lived their entire Beatle career before they were my age.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a fucking hell of a thought. Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that. They're extremely young. You don't think about that. You always think of them as
India and this and that, Shea Stadium, people crying over that. Yeah. You know, like, it's very remarkable that they didn't all lose their minds. I mean, you could make a case that Lennon lost it for a second there, but by and large, they all kept it pretty together.
Well, when you look at Paul McCartney, you know, I mean, he looks great. You know, guys.
Paul is dead. We know that.
Well, the other Paul, the spare Paul.
No, I love Paul so much.
Yeah,
I've seen him a handful of times. Last time I saw him was at Tinley Park. He played for 3.5 hours straight, didn't take a sip of water. You know, I mean, the guy's an animal.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, he's not doing it for the money. Like, he's doing it because that's what he does. You know?
And there's nary a man who can play for 3.5 hours, and everyone knows the words to every song.
Yeah,
he wrote that many songs that people love. You know, so. Maybe a Billy Joel type or an Elton John or something like that. But by and large, you know, that's rarefied air.
100%. Anyway, moving on from the Beatles.
Sure, let's move on.
So, not to get into too much of what you're currently doing, just to kind of lead up to that a small little bit, you know, obviously the Beatles, you know, are the...
More formative,
They're the building blocks, the foundation, shall we say. But where did it go from there? You mentioned kind of a punk rock.
So that's kind of my dad's... What I would call phase one was like a lot of my dad's material that I was just listening to in his CD collection. Yeah. And then moving on from there, it got into... I'm not embarrassed to say, but I don't like this band as much as I did. But Red Hot Chili Peppers were big for me. Pearl Jam and Nirvana and so on. You know, I got a hold of like that 90s wave, and that was not something that he listened to. So that was felt good departing, you know, from that, from, you know, like the paternal catalog. And that lasted out a couple of years. And then Elliott Smith.
Yeah.
Somehow, I think I was listening to Pandora, John Frusciante Radio. Who's the guitar player of the Chili Peppers? And Elliott Smith, Alphabet Town came on, and I don't know what it was about that song, but it just completely fucking swept over me, and I really couldn't hold myself back. And that became pretty much my musical obsession at that point. And he's such a clever songwriter, and it really does have the advent as a musician of having his early career is almost all acoustic songs, songs you can play by yourself. And then he has a late career that's, he recorded at Abbey Road and had Warner Brothers money behind him and full orchestral, really fleshed out stuff. So you could kind of see how you could go from one to the other. And, that was just really incredible for me. But I did have a punk phase. I love Bad Brains and Black Flag and Dead Kennedys and all that stuff. There's a website called 4chan, and it's kind of got a bad rap for being bad, but it is bad. But there's a music board, and I was on the music board because a buddy of mine was on there, and they basically shame you for not liking a genre. Yeah. Oh, you don't like country? Go listen to George Jones and call me in the morning. Oh, you don't like ambient? Go listen to Brian Eno and call me in the morning. So, like, they, you know...
It's a one-upmanship kind of thing.
Yeah, there was definitely kind of like a completionist mentality of, you have to listen to it all. And so there was a phase where I was listening to everything. And I don't do that anymore. Yeah. I kind of found what I like.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to be some way discerning. And, you know, there's so much music out there. You can't listen to everything. And you can't just listen for educational sake all the time. You got to listen for pleasure and then kind of take it apart.
Yes. But you nailed it, though, when you said listening for educational sake.
Yeah.
That was definitely what I was doing for a certain point in time.
You know.
And then a band that really changed my life was Pavement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They keep coming up in conversation with everybody, actually.
They're just the complete quintessential slacker rock band.
Yeah.
It's the fucking ultimate mix of not giving a shit and giving a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the coolest band. And writing really good songs, but also not taking themselves seriously at all.
Yeah.
And, there's bands also in that orbit, Guided by Voices and Slint and a couple other bands that I really, really enjoyed growing up. But Pavement is one I always come back to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, great band, you know.
Amazing.
You know,
Stephen Malkmus. I had a chance to see him at Talia Hall a couple of years ago, and it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he's still touring the whole time, I believe, you know.
His band is called The Jicks now, yeah.
So you kind of did you go in a different direction? And you know, we're getting pretty close to the current kind of phase of this podcast. But just to kind of move on to what you're doing, not without talking
too
much about.
Well, then I caught a hold of bluegrass.
Yeah,
and bluegrass is like really kind of swept over my purview. Like in the last, I guess it's now maybe 6 years or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems longer when I say it like that. But got really well, and I guess come to think of it, it coincides with the difference of moving from electric guitar primarily to acoustic guitar primarily.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you wind up getting into players like Doc Watson and Tony Rice, and of course Billy Strings was huge for me at one point. There's kind of two classes of players. There's electric guitar players and acoustic guitar players, you know, and they tend to kind of stay in their own camps. Like,
yeah, but you can do a little bit of cross-pollination.
Of course. You got your Claptons and whatever else, but, you know, that can do both really well. But, Tony Rice was huge for me. I mean, flat-top jazz and bluegrass and whatever that mix is, he's the master.
Right? Kind of old-timey.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, breathing life into old songs, yeah.
So you do, with the Blackouts, you're doing a lot of traditional stuff, you know, a lot of country stuff.
A fair bit of it, yeah, sure,
Would you be able to give us a traditional song now?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So what song are you going to play?
We could do Shady Grove, maybe.
Oh, cool, awesome, I love that song.
Yeah.
All right, well, take it away.
Brown, she's the darling of my heart, the sweetest girl in town. Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I say, Shady Grove, my little love, I'm bound to go your way. Summertime and apples in the fall. If I can't have little Shady Grove, I don't want no girl at all. Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I sing. Shady Grove, my little love, I'm bound to go your way. Shoes and stockings in her hands and her little bare feet on the floor. Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I sing. Shady Grove, my little love, I'm bound to go your way. Barlow knife. Now I want sweet Shady Grove to say she'll be my wife. Shady Grove, my little love. Shady Grove, I say. Shady Grove, my little love. I'm bound to go your way.
So that was Shady Grove. Thanks a million, Ray. So, yeah, let's talk about that song. So there, that's an old traditional song. I know that Fairport Convention have a song similar to that, Matty Groves. So
yes.
There is, like, you, there is like millions of versions of that song.
I think every town has their own version. Yeah. Yeah, and then Matty Groves is another song. Maybe I'll play that later. We'll see. But that's another tune where, you know, the antagonist, if you will, is Lord Daniel.
Yeah.
But if you go to the next town over, it's, you know, Lord Samuel.
Yeah.
If you go to the next town over,
Lord Darnell.
Right. So I think that, you know, the lyrics are so varied. And I know there's like a real Appalachia version of Shady Grove. You know, I'm going back to Harlan. The lyrics are all different. So
yeah, but I would come Scotch Irish, I suppose. Those traditions were probably brought over by immigrants coming from my part of the world, I guess.
Right.
You know?
Bluegrass is always everything to Ireland in a sense.
It does. I mean, there's such similarities, the same kind of format and the tunes.
Matty Groves in particular, I heard, and this is I'm just regurgitating this, I don't know this to be perfectly true, but there's a manuscript in 1650 something about Matty Groves, and they're telling a story about 100 years prior.
Yeah.
So the characters in this song are from the 1500s, you know, so that's a very old song.
It must have been shocking, whatever that incident was, whenever it happened.
Well, I'll play the song if you want. Yeah. It is shocking, yeah.
You know, you know, it's like a lot of, I suppose, in a lot of, you know, folk tradition, it was always, say, an extreme event, say somebody murdering a girl, or, you know, this guy cheating on
Tom Dooley.
Yeah. I was only listening to a Sweeney's Men version of that this morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or Little Sadie, or all these songs are about, you know, a little girl getting murdered somehow.
What's the other one? Willow Gardens, you know, the Everly Brothers do a version of it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I listen to a lot of, there's this band, they're pretty popular in Ireland at the moment, Lancome, if you ever get a chance to listen to it.
I'll put it on my list.
Oh, they're great. But all their songs involve somebody dying, you know? It's always bleak. It's always bleak.
No, and a lot of bluegrass is that. Murder ballads, basically.
Yeah, for sure, you know? You know, but
right, because you know, at one point you think, why do people write songs?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they write them as this for the same reason they write poems or stories. You know.
Yeah.
Because we gotta make note of this. You know, like.
Yeah, I'm pretty,
somebody better remember this. Like,
I'm personally fascinated with the story song. You know, it's something that really, really appeals to me, and I guess it's a way of passing on, you know, an extreme event through an oral tradition. You know?
Yeah, correct. You know? Yeah, and it seems to even work better than just prose. You know.
Oh, it does. Yeah, for sure, 100%. You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, and a lot of this kind of like folk tradition and stuff, it kind of really, it really speaks to, you know, where you're at right now, you know, with what you're doing. You know?
Certainly, yeah. No, I'm well steeped in it more than I was as a kid, I would say.
You know, so that kind of lends to my next question about the Rolling Blackouts. You know, because I mean, Rolling Blackouts is very, very obvious.
The Rolling Blackouts, the band I play in with Henry Heine on bass, Tommy Russell on guitar, my sister Kate singing, and myself on acoustic. Yeah.
Can you just tell us how the band got going and what each person's? I know you mentioned Tommy there earlier on, but each person's.
Well, I met Tommy at a bar, and we were listening to the Grateful Dead, and we had a conversation, but it wasn't necessarily. It wasn't obvious that we'd become close friends. And And then a couple more instances happened, and then I was living in the city.
Yeah.
And I was living with a really great drummer, Crackerjack drummer, and I was playing in another band called Gary and the Snails in the city, which is kind of like a funk fusion pop kind of outfit. But I was back in the burbs talking to my parents at my house, and I said, and I brought Garrett with me on drums. Yeah. And I said, hey, does anyone want to jam? And I was friends with Tommy on Facebook or whatever, and he's like, yeah, I'll come and jam. So he came over, and we had the coolest jam. Boom, instant friends.
Yeah.
So Tommy and I, boom, that's in. And then Henry and I are both very, very good friends of one of my favorite songwriters, if not my favorite songwriter, John Bryan. I don't know if you know the name of that guy.
I don't know.
He's incredible. He basically makes his bones now doing film soundtracks in Hollywood. Yeah. But he's and I just had the chance to see him about a month ago, and it tears streaming from my eyes just about. It was so great.
Is he a local guy?
No, he's in LA. Yeah. But I was at the bar. I was at Yankee Doodle Bar, and I was talking to Henry. And here's the trick. I don't want to make this too long of a story, but I had seen Henry through Uncle Pat.
Yeah.
Of course, the listeners might not know, but you know, my late Uncle Pat, who's since passed away, rest in peace. But Henry was always working with him, doing sound or this and that and the other. And so I knew his face. So I see him, and I say, hey, man, you know, what's going on? And there's another band we're really into called NRBQ, the New Rhythm and Blues Quartet. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I don't know those.
They're two kind of, I don't want to say obscure, but musicians bands kind of.
Yeah.
And he's like, how the hell do you know those guys? And I'm like, well, I'm kind of a nerd. And he's like, and I brought up John Bryan, and he's like, I used to see John Bryan every week at Largo. I'm like, so Henry and I became friends over mutual interest.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you invited him along to jam, or?
And then Henry and Tommy and I were drumming up the idea for a couple weeks. Hey, we should all get together, this, that, and the other. And then we got together, and Henry has a studio in Algonquin, and not unlike this, but a little bigger and a little more older.
I've
spent more time in there. Yeah, you've been there. Yeah, and things clicked right away.
Yeah,
and then it wasn't but 6 or 8 months later, Kate started coming up. My sister Kate started coming up to sing songs with us, and then it became obvious that she should become a member.
Yeah, yeah, and you guys are pretty much playing everywhere right now. You
know? Yeah, yeah, we're all around town.
You know, that's awesome. You know, must have caught you in the last couple of months a whole bunch of times, you know.
Yeah, but, no, we're slamming the gigs, and people are
they're digging it,
coming out. Yeah, it's cool.
That's the most important thing, really, you know.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's no fun without an audience, yeah.
For sure, you know. But I'm not entirely sure when this podcast is going to come out, sometime maybe the next week or whatever. But can you tell us what you got coming up in the near future?
Not sure when this is going to come out, but Paddy's Day, Yankee Doodle, and then, the 16th, not the 17th. But I'd have to check my phone, and I don't know if I can. But there's a million gigs. Go to therollingblackoutsband.com.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And you've got Facebook and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, so, yes. Yeah. Rolling Blackouts, you can't miss us if you search us on social media.
And the Yankee Doodle is kind of like your Wrigley Field, basically.
That's our headquarters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully, if it does come out by the 16th,
brilliant. Yeah, yeah, show up, and that room fills up quick, so get there early.
Awesome. Well, with bearing that in mind, maybe it's time for another tune.
Right? You're here.
What are you going to play for us this time around?
Let's think. How about a really old one, Moonshiner?
You perfect. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Right, Moonshiner. Great. Take
here,
it away.
Here goes. 2, 3, 4.
For 17 long years, I spent all my money on whiskey and beer. But I'll go to some hollow and I'll set up my still. And if whiskey don't kill me, I don't know what will. I Well, I'll go to some bar room and I'll drink with my friends where the women can follow to see just what I spend. But God bless all pretty women. Well, I wish they was mine with breath as sweet as the dew on the vine. Drink when I'm dry, and a dollar when I'm hard up, religion when I die. 'Cause the whole world is a bottle, and life is but a dram. When the bottle gets empty, it's a rain worth a damn, no.
All right, thanks, Ray. That was awesome. So, Moonshiners, yeah. That's, you know, a lot of versions of that song as well, isn't there?
Oh, it's as old as dirt, yeah.
Yeah, and... can you give us a little bit of background and, you know, what you think, where you think that might come from?
Well, yeah, I think I could. It's about an old drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it has enough substance to kind of relate to anybody, but it really is about an old drunk, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, yeah. It's like, I suppose there's been a million songs written about that particular condition. Do you know?
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah. Yeah, it's either about a girl or being sad about a girl or being drunk. Like, yeah, those are like the three topics.
Or as we just mentioned as well, murdering people.
Or so, murder, or a sad story, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how this, it's all part of the oral tradition as well. You know.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, it's almost like people can't help themselves. Yeah. Like, it just comes out no matter what. People are always going to write songs about a girl. People are always going to write songs about love.
Yeah, and it's like, it's kind of like these important human emotions, you know, and stuff that maybe lessons that need to be passed on to people through song.
Know? Well, and it feels bad to bottle things up, so people just need to let it go somehow.
You know, it's like...
through songs, I guess.
And I'm not, like, I've said this before on this podcast, I don't really personally believe there's any such thing as, you know, a bad song. Do you know what I mean? Every song comes from such and such a place.
Well, I mean, there's... I agree with you in that sentiment. I've said this before, and I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
However, you could probably drum up a few examples of a bad song.
Some of my own.
Yeah. I'll show you one right now if you want.
Yeah. But, you know, where I'm going with this really is probably, I suppose, towards kind of like contemporary, you know, music without really getting into the weeds about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. No, I agree. If anyone likes it, it's a good song in a sense, right?
I mean,
if you have one person who likes it, then it's already a good song in a sense.
Unless the person who wrote it doesn't even like it.
Unless it's just you.
Nobody likes it.
I love it. Yeah, no, I agree. No, but you make a really interesting, and that's almost like a kind of a heady point of, you know, is there such a thing as a bad song? Yeah. Just because you don't like it, that doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
If someone likes it, it's already good.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we could go in several different directions with that particular point as well, you know what I mean?
But that's almost foregoing the idea that there is a... almost unanimous consensus on good songs.
Yeah.
You know, like Yesterday by the Beatles. Yeah. No one's going to call that a bad song. And if you do, get out of my house, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like, even if you don't like the song, you got to look at it objectively and go, it's a good song, you know. Like,
or at least have the maturity in yourself to say, it's not for me, but I get it.
But hell, look at it. It's good. Yeah. I mean, like, fine. It's definitely doing its job. There's nothing wrong with it at all, you know. Whereas, you know, there's some, like, bubblegum country that's just not for me, you know. Hit the latch on my truck with the dog in my lap. You know, like, some of that doesn't hit me, you know.
Yeah,
like, but it's okay. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just...
not for me.
I would never go home after a hard day, you know, put my cigarette out in the ashtray and go put my headphones on and put on, you know. Like,
a little bit of... what's his name? The guy throwing a few bars of... Old Town, what's that, or, you know, that that song that was kind of controversial one from last year. What was that?
Oh, yeah.
Small, don't do that in a small town.
Yeah. Jason Aldean, I think it was. No, that's just not my bag. Yeah. But country is a really divisive genre, especially for me. I mean, I think I'm in that thing where I love Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, and, you know, bluegrass gets right up against country.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily country, but there's a huge Venn diagram there. But... you know, Brad Paisley's a great guitar player, but I just don't listen to his music, you know? So I don't know what that line is for me, but I can tell what I like and don't like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, apart from listening to music, as we were talking about earlier on, as an educational endeavor, you know what I mean? You're listening for pleasure. And at the end of the day, you know, that's what it's all about, you know?
Well, it's almost like being attracted to a woman or a man or whatever you're into, but like, you don't really know exactly what it is. You just like it or don't.
Yeah.
Stop trying to put your finger on it, you know, because you can't.
You
like it or you don't, and that's what it is. Like.
Yeah. And, you know, from a music creation standpoint, you know, for me, it's all about the process, you know, but, and if, you know, people dig it, then down along the line, you know, that's always a bonus, you know?
Yeah. Well, to the point I was bringing up before we got started, it took me a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
I was cripplingly embarrassed isn't the right word, but just
self-doubt.
Yeah. Self-conscious maybe is the right word about singing and playing in front of people solo or, you know, in a band you can kind of make your way a little easier. But playing solo for people, I would get sweaty palms and just be like, you know, all up in my head about things. But then you realize, what the hell, even, you know, music is better than silence. They want to hear a song. Play them a song.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to have the world's best voice.
Yeah.
They come out how they come out. And just play the song for people. And, you know, I was a teenager when I figured that out. But, like, you know, it was well after I had started playing music, you know. And I definitely remember being very nervous on stage a couple times. And then after a while, you just realize, have a beer and get up there and just fucking do it, you know. And so it's really way more simple than you're making it, you know.
Oh, 100%, you know. And at the end of the day, you're not hurting anybody and people aren't going to think about it as much as you do.
Right.
Unless, of course, you blow their heads off, you know what I mean, you know?
Well, unless you do it completely wrong, but I was never doing that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's the same idea of like making a mistake on stage as a musician or a player. You're likely to be the only one who noticed. No one's really going, oh, unless you really goof it, you know, but
Well, I do stand in front of you at your gigs with a notebook. You know?
I'd be happy to go through it.
No, I don't, by the way. But,
No, the gigs are going great, and we just had a practice with Henry at Henry's place just the other day, and we've got a bunch of new music we're rolling out, and my favorite part, because I think I've been in enough bands where, and Henry certainly has, Tommy has, my sister is getting used to it. She's very, very receptive and very a quick learner. Being in enough bands where, like, you got to rehearse this song six times in a row, and it's going to become a bummer.
Yeah.
But you got to get it right.
It's work.
It's work. It's like you're sucking the fun out of it at one point.
Yeah.
It's like, we got to get it right, though. Like, And, you know, that's something that some people are allergic to.
Yeah.
Like, why are we playing this again? Because we because we have to goof that part. Yeah, we got to do it again. Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's you got to put in the practice. But you know, as well, like gigging, like you go out and play a show. You know, it's worth 10 practices in a way. You know.
Yes. Yeah. When the stakes are high and there's only one shot at it. Yeah.
Yeah, the pressure's on to get it right. No, and you guys get it right all the time. You know what I mean?
And the thing about our band is we build in a lot of spots where we don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
There's a lot of improvisation.
Yeah.
And a lot of, hey, once we hit this D minor chord or whatever it might be, we're just going to go.
Yeah.
And then we all need to shoot a glance at each other when we hop back in. And it could be a minute. If Tommy's feeling it, it could be 2 minutes.
Yeah.
If someone gets an idea, it might be, you know, this, that, or the other. So, you know, that's something that's not really simple to practice, really. You know, like, you kind of just have to get it right. Like,
well, you guys don't have a drummer, you know?
And yes.
That might
we have Kate playing tambourine and shaker, and so there's an element of percussion, but no drummer. Yeah.
But do you feel that makes it a little bit trickier to kind of execute on, say, you know, re-entering after a kind of, I suppose, improvisational section?
Like a free time, something, you know? Yeah. I think that there's blessings and curses. It makes it easier in a sense.
Yeah.
There's no drummer.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
We can also just, it could fizzle completely out. 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, you're back in.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no drummer to worry about. But in a sense, yeah, it is harder that there's no central time.
Yeah. But you guys,
I think that's good and bad.
Yeah. You guys are so well rehearsed and you play together so much. I suppose there's,
gigging a lot really helps.
Yeah, there's an instinctive, like, you probably know what Tommy's going to do next or what.
And it really helps that, you know, we came together because we all really like the same stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of Grateful Dead covers. You know, not every single show is like half Grateful Dead, but, you know, on any given show, it might be a brand new Dead cover. And, you know, that, I think, really informs a lot of our sound, in a sense. But then there's also just, you know, ballads that Kate will sing. And then there's, you know, you never know what you're going to get, which is cool. We span a pretty wide net, you know, so it's
well, cool. There is a diverse amount of genres being hit on, you know. It does make it for, like, an entertaining...
There's some sing-alongs, there's some stuff I'm sure you've never heard, you know. It's a little bit of everything, yeah.
That's awesome. Can we do another song?
Yeah, we'll do one more. I don't know what I'm going to play. Can I play you another old one?
Absolutely, yeah, whatever you want.
This is a Norman Blake tune. Yeah. We'll do Ginseng Sullivan.
Ginseng Sullivan, okay. Take it away.
Here.
1, 2, 3.
About 3 miles from the Bats Hill Yard at the reverse curve on down, not far south from the town depot, Sullivan's shack was found, back on higher ground. You could see him every day just walking down the line with his old brown sack across his back and his long hair down behind, speaking his worried mind. It's a long way from the Delta to the North Georgia hills, and his old sack full of ginseng won't pay no traveling bills. But I'm too old to ride the rails, I'll thumb the road alone, but I guess I'll never make it back to home, my muddy water Mississippi Delta home. Winters here, they get too cold and damp, it makes me ill. I can't dig no roots in the mountainside with the downpours hard and still. Gotta sit at the foot of the hill. But next summer, if things turn right, the companies will pay high, and I'll make enough money to pay my bills and bid these mountains goodbye. And then he said with a sigh, it's a long way from the Delta to the North Georgia hill, and a tote sack full of ginseng won't pay no traveling bills. But I'm too old to ride the rails, I'll thumb the road alone, but I guess I'll never make it back to home, my muddy water Mississippi Delta home.
go. You know, Sullivan is actually an Irish word. Well, it's an Irish name, but Sullivan means one eye. Sul is eye.
Really?
And a wan means one, so Sulawan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It means a man who's had his eye taken out?
Well, not necessarily had his eye, but it's like, you know, yeah. Sullivan. Oh, that's Sullivan. Oh, he's one eye, you know?
That's fascinating. I didn't know that. Yeah, it's kind of an Appalachian tune by the time it was written by Norman Blake. But wow, that's fascinating. It really is fascinating to think about a lot of the surname etymology or what it means. I think so. The guitar player in my band, Tommy Russell, I think Russell is red beard or something. I forget what it is, but
yeah, probably. Yeah, Rua means red in Irish. You know? So maybe it's an amalgamation of that, you know?
Yeah. And when those languages were kind of coalescing, you know, in the UK and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like you have, if you go back far enough, you know, and I had the misfortune of having to study this, but Old English, which is nothing like modern day or even Middle English, you know, but Old English is like a Germanic language. Even a lot of the alphabet is different to modern English.
But then it got blasted by a little bit of Latin,
French influence, you know, with the Normans, and then that probably amalgamated into Middle English, you know, with Chaucer and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, and then onto modern English from Shakespeare on, you know,
where it's a lot more fascinating. Or just thinking about Johnson or Peterson, or, you know, it's like, that was Peter's kid.
Or, you know, McCarthy. Mac means son, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so Carthy's son, McCarthy.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah, it's worth a thought, all of that stuff. It's good stuff.
It is interesting. Language is interesting, and it kind of goes with music as well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and again, if we're talking about things we are talking about song, it's all very interconnected, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, certainly. It's amazing, yeah. Gee, I would play Matty Groves, but it's God fucking 20 verses. I could probably remember them. But.
Yeah, oh, I know that one. Yeah, I've struggled with that one myself. You know?
Yeah, I have to play a couple of Bob Dylan tunes for the Blackouts. Tangled Up in Blue.
Oh, that's a long one, too.
Yeah. It's a long one. I mean, at least it kind of has a narrative arc where you can kind of tell where you're at. You know, you don't have to remember them in order because they kind of make an order themselves. But.
Yeah, it's like learning the story kind of outlines. If you remember exactly how the story goes.
If you know the story. Same thing with Matty Groves. Yeah. But I remember once, I've almost never gotten my way through that song without flubbing something.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, I'm actually.
And then one time I was at a friend's house and we were, we ate some stuff.
Yeah.
some things that grow.
Yeah.
And I got it perfectly, and I was like, "Oh!" And I have got it perfectly ever since.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, well, maybe there's some connections there, that some neural connections, somewhere along the line that I wasn't considering."
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, if you get through something once, it's kind of like writing something down. When you write something down, it like kind of imprints it.
Taking notes makes you better at remembering.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about before we turned the mics on about imprinted mistakes. There's also kind of an opposite of that too, you know.
Yeah, you know? There's imprinted correctness. Yeah.
Exactly, you know what I mean. And it's like learning anything, I suppose, music, song, whatever. You know what I mean? It's muscle memory. It's all about imprinting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, repetition has a real way of getting a hold of you.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to, I'm going in a little bit of a direction personally with my musical endeavors.
Well, I don't want to turn the tables too much here, but do you want to tell me something you've been doing lately in the can over there at the farm?
Well, to be honest with you, kind of falling back on the acoustic guitar lately and just open tuning and just sitting in the bedroom playing.
Nice, yeah.
Playing acoustic guitar.
Well, one of my favorite records ever is Blood on the Tracks, Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And speaking of Tangled Up in Blue, and I think he wrote that entire album in open D.
Oh, wow, yeah, interesting.
And like every tune was in the same key. Yeah, they all sounded kind of the same.
That's interesting.
So I think he had to move things around a little bit to make it sound like an album. But there's a lot of good work that can be done just sitting in an open tuning with an acoustic guitar in your room.
It's from G all the way at the moment. God's chord, you know. So it's I have it trying to learn a lot of stuff by maybe the Irish listeners will have heard of Paul Brady. He's like one of my favorite guitar players.
I don't know him.
He's still active, but he does a lot of open tunings and try to learn some of his stuff. But it's at the moment I'm finding it to be hard work but rewarding. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the best kind, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing worse than sitting down and playing guitar and feeling like you got nothing done.
Yeah. Like sometimes you're gonna go through phases of plugging in the guitar, playing just nonsense just for your own, because I'm enjoying the sounds that it's making, but not really. It's not, you wouldn't call it practice, you know?
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't call it learning anything as such, you know?
Well, that's another good point, is there's a difference between good, honest practice
and
just kind of futzing around.
Yeah, but you know, like, there's a lot to be said for futzing around as
well. Agreed, comfortable with your instrument and just being honest about what you want to hear, and that's another good point.
Well, you know, that's a good way of, it's a good way of, you know, writing songs or falling on a good idea.
Just stumbling about and finding something that sounds good. Ooh, let's linger on that. That sounds cool. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's, I feel like that's how everyone writes. Yeah.
For sure. You know, it's like we're kind of conduits of it. It just becomes, it's almost accidental.
Well, one of my favorite quotes is, I'm going to paraphrase, but Paul McCartney is talking about writing a song and he says something to the tune of like, it's like a butterfly. You have to catch it right away or it will go. I mean, how many times have you had an idea and you're like, oh, that's good, and then it's escaped you already?
All the time.
Yeah, right.
All the time. You know?
So he's like, I think the famous story is he woke out of bed from a dream and he goes to the piano and he had the melody for Yesterday.
Yeah.
But he's like, just get it down.
Yeah.
Just make it something and I'll come back and fix it later. So the original line was, scrambled eggs. Oh, baby, how I love your legs. Because he just knew he had to get that melody out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he came back and wrote the best lyrics ever. So, like, there's something to be said about just capturing an idea. You know?
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, it's like, oh, geez, I've had that brilliant idea. I've just woke up from a dream. Like, just, you know what? I'll remember that tomorrow. No problem.
Not a chance.
No, it's not happening.
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. I mean, it's such a vast thing, really, you know.
Yeah, and there's no one right or wrong way to do it. I mean, I imagine David Byrne didn't write songs that way. You know, there's a million ways to go about it, I'm sure.
Probably not. It's like, I was talking to Anthony earlier on about writing process and, you know, like, not to be talking about my own stuff too much or anything like that, but, like, the last thing I did, it was all very piecemeal, one piece at a time, you know, putting it together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, well, especially when you're working on a digital audio workspace, you can definitely write that way, and I've done that a lot too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's kind of where the kind of this acoustic kind of rebellion is coming from.
Or sometimes just layering, and all of a sudden you're going, "Oh, well, that's the actual melody now." Yeah. You know, I'm five layers in, and I've just found the melody. Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's like you said. There's no one process. There's no one way of doing things. You know, it's a multitude of different things.
Right.
You know,
it's the ends justify every mean. Yeah,
exactly. So, what's the future hold for Rolling Blackouts?
Oh, I don't think we have plans to take over the world or anything, but we do like playing gigs.
And
we've got a bunch packed in for the summer, and they seem to be getting a little bigger and bigger. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that the end process is, I've written plenty of songs, but I haven't really written for this particular arrangement of and sound. So I think I'm just trying to tweak my process to accommodate, you know, this current arrangement of instruments and sensibilities and so on. So the idea is to write some tunes and get some bigger gigs.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's
Henry happens to be, you know, Henry's no spring chicken. He's been around a million people, knows a million contacts and so on. And he's like, dude, if we had original music, kiss it goodbye. We could get gigs anywhere you want. So that's the idea.
Yeah.
But it's been a little, not a grind, but it's not what I'm typically used to writing for. So I've been trying to adjust, but that's the idea.
So have you introduced a lot of original music into the rehearsal space?
No, not a lot, but some.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to get everybody on the same page about a goddamn cover, you know.
Yeah.
Much less, you know. So, you know, it's working. But, you know, I think we just had the 1 year anniversary of Kate joining the band.
Oh, wow.
So,
congratulations, Kate, if you're listening.
Yeah. So, you know, it takes about a year to kind of let the chips fall and figure out where everything really stands. So, but also 1 year is not that long. So this time next year, we'll probably be in a way better place.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to leave it at that, Ray.
Here, here.
Thanks a million for coming down.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, man. This has been great.
And as we'd like to say around here, if you don't give up, you never fail.
Yeah. I'll take that advice.